This is the Video School Online Podcast with Phil Ebner, session number 2. Let's do it.
Welcome to the Video School Online Podcast, where it's all about learning how to make better videos. And now, here's your host, Phil Ebner.
Hey guys, what's up? This is Phil Ebner with the VideoSchoolOnline.com podcast. Today we have a very special guest. He's the first guest for this podcast. We're bringing in Vince Patton. He's a longtime friend of mine. We went to high school together, and then we graduated from Damien High School in Laverne, California. Went on to Loyola Marymount University studying video production. And since then, we've been on a journey of our own filmmaking paths, and I brought him on this podcast to just talk about his experiences as a filmmaker. And this is kind of the first one of these filmmaker series, so bear with us. We're just going to be having a conversation about how Vince got into filmmaking, some special topics like studying abroad, making a film in Europe, and then what he's up to right now. So welcome, Vince.
Hi, how's it going, everybody? How's it going, Phil?
It's great. So yeah, like I said, Vince has been a great friend, and we actually went to high school together. And so let's start out back then and talk a little bit about how did you get into not only video making, but also photography, or where did you get your creative juices from?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question, because back in high school, and Phil will remember this, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I was thinking about being like a brain surgeon for a while, but that didn't really pan out, obviously. But I remember there was a time where Phil and I were just kind of like hanging around, and we wanted to do like little videos, and we got some of our friends together, and we're trying to shoot like this Street Fighter commercials or something. Do you remember that, Phil?
Street Fighter commercial? I don't think I was a part of this.
I remember, like, Jack Horn, who's a friend of ours in high school, like, he worked for, like, it was called, like, the Damien News Network or something like that.
Yeah.
Our high school news program. And they had, like, these little commercials that they would do, and they would show it to, like, the whole school and then, like, promote, like, things that were going on campus that week or whatnot. And I remember, like, I think it was some of us were trying to make, like, the Street Fighters, like, spoof. And it never actually came to, like, happening. Like, we filmed, like, a little bit of it, but back then I was, like, acting in it. And I don't really like acting. For some reason, I was acting. And then along the way, I took a photography course in high school, and I just really liked it. I wouldn't say any of my photos were particularly good, but it was just great, like, being in there in a developing room and, like, trying to go find something and capture it, and then developing it yourself and, like, getting to see, like, your trial and error of it. And so then it just kind of, like, took off from there. I really liked it. We were getting to the point where we were starting to apply to colleges, and I knew where I wanted to go already. I wanted to go to Loyola Marymount University. I didn't know for what, though. And actually, it was my sister who was like, well, you really seem to like photography, and, like, you really like film, so why don't you just go into film? And I was like, hey, you know what? That's a great idea. So I started looking at the film school at LMU, and it happens to be a really, really good film school, and applied to it and got in and then took off from there.
Yeah, I remember, applying to film schools, and it was a really big decision between Chapman and LMU, and I was definitely headed towards Chapman. But you had a big, you were a big influence in helping me go to LMU, because I remember I really didn't want to go to LMU, and even after visiting the school, I didn't want to go to LMU, but you kept saying, oh, well, what about LMU? You should go to LMU. You should go to LMU. And it really came down to the last day, like one or the last week before choosing what school, and I remember visiting both schools, and it was just like, I went to LMU, and that was the place that I wanted to be. So, and
I remember that day too. I remember you, like, went on a hike, and then, like, you called me, and you're like, I'm up at the top of the hill, and I've been thinking for, like, the past hours. And I picked LMU. It's like, yeah, LMU.
I totally remember that. Yeah, I forgot about that. I definitely remember doing that, though. Yeah, that's crazy. And yeah, like I was into video production, and I remember, you know, just making little movies with our friends. We made the great Tijuana TJ Trip documentary because Vince and I were part of the Tijuana Mission Club at Damien, where we would go do community service down in Tijuana, and we would go down on the Saturdays, you know, help a church down there and help the people down there, and we made a great documentary. I look back on it and it's terrible, but it was a good first experience.
I remember our first taste of like actual I guess of directed film course was at Damien as well, because like you and a few other of us we got like sponsored to go to Laverne College and take like a small little class there.
Yeah, I remember that. I think that was before we did the TJ Trip video, because our principal, Father Travers, he wanted us to have a little bit more experience. And so, yeah, I remember that class.
Yeah, it was a very basic class. It was mainly just, like, talking about, like, I think, like, compositions and how to, like, wire cameras and whatnot.
Yeah, I remember the one tip that I still remember from that class that I still, like, carry with me is the guy kept saying, don't be a firefighter shooter, and what he meant was don't, like, you know, firefighters, they go to the fire, they get their hose, they got it at their hip, and they're just, like, spraying the house or whatever that's on fire, like, nonstop, and his point was don't do that as a filmmaker. Don't go out with your camera and just turn your camera on and shoot whatever you see left to right, up and down. And I still actually think about that a lot.
Which is true, because I mean, one, from a point of just like the production, like if you're doing that, you're wasting time. You're not going to use a lot of it, and then it's not going to be really good a lot of that, because you're just like blanket covering everything.
Yeah.
And then when you get into the editing room, your editor is just going to be like throwing out a bunch of shots that you just wasted all that time on. So like it is helpful to like, you know, plan your shots out, think about what you actually need.
Yeah Well, we'll get more into the tips and tricks in a little bit, but what are you up to right now? We both graduated from film school a couple, well, now two graduations ago, so back in 2011. And so what have you been up to?
Well, since graduating, I went into the freelance side of filmmaking, and I work primarily as a cinematographer, a camera assistant, and then often I'll also work as a camera operator and a gaffer. And I've worked on a few features. I think this last year I worked on about 5 feature films. One of them is destined for Sundance, so keep an eye on that. That'd be pretty cool. And then currently in this year, 2013, I recently shot a short film. It was called 1981. It's about like AIDS. It's about a specific AIDS case for this person who's contemplating suicide.
Is that like a narrative or a documentary?
Yeah, that one's a narrative. It's a narrative. And it features an actor actually from a Fountains of Wayne music video, the little kid from the Fountains of Wayne music video, Stacey's mom, if any of you remember that music video.
Nice.
And then the upcoming weeks, I'm working on a short film as a camera assistant, and I will be shooting another short film later next week. So trying to keep busy and, you know, just seeing what comes along and taking jobs when I can.
Nice. It sounds like you're very busy, and that's not only lucky, because it's lucky and, well, you're talented, so you're getting a lot of jobs. So how, for, you know, for film students or just freelancers, like, how do you go about getting jobs? Who are you talking to? Are these all from contacts, or are they contacts of contacts, or random, or what?
Yeah, so getting jobs in freelance can be really hard. I mean, the first year for me was definitely very difficult. I remember kind of struggling for a while and just kind of kind of be nervous and like worried to see if it would even work. But the thing is like the more you're working and the more you go out and like actually, you know, try to work hard, you don't even necessarily have to be the greatest person ever, but if like you work hard and you have a good personality, people take note of that. And like people have told me, and I agreed to this as well, as like it's a DP, I rather work with somebody that isn't as good as this other guy if I enjoy working with that person. Like if I know that I'm gonna have like 5 days with this one person and like I can get along with them and they're talented, it may not be the best, I'm gonna pick that person over the person who might be the best but is really hard to work with. So for me, I happen to just be fortunate to where I went to LMU and I had a few contacts that were a few years ahead of me, and I called them up, I asked if I could help them out on some projects that they had coming up, and luckily they did. And I think I did a few jobs for free or low salary, and then slowly working with them, other people noticed me, and I tried to hang out with like the people I worked with too on like when we're not working, and slowly I just started building up a network, and from there people started referring me. So most of my work now comes from either referrals or rehires, which is great.
Nice. That's really cool. So it's really about building a network of, you know, friends and fellow filmmakers who, you know, are doing their own projects. And I like what you say about, you know, it's easier to get hired when you're a better person to work around, because I think that's with any job. But I would totally agree that I would rather, you know, work on a set with someone that I enjoy who may not be as good as the person that, you know, is there that's great but is an asshole or whatever. And so that's a really good point. And I mean, film sets, you know, you're working long hours, you're there all day, you gotta get, you know, you're in close quarters, and so that's a very good point. So be nice, all you guys that are listening to this. That's a good tip.
Trust me, it can be long hours, especially in some of your earlier days. I had one day that I think we did, and this wasn't one of those like 24-hour film festivals, but we shot for 26 hours straight.
Wow.
A long day.
That wasn't a union shoot, I'm sure.
It wasn't a union shoot, no.
So actually another thing that I kind of forgot about, but something that you do and we've done together, is we've shot some weddings together. And we're actually shooting a wedding coming up this weekend. I know there's a lot of people that are interested in shooting weddings and that kind of business because it's, you know, it pays well, but it's also a lot of work. What thoughts do you have about shooting weddings, or any advice for people that are getting into that sort of field?
Yeah, well, one thing I would say is just like the film industry, as I was saying, a lot of my contacts come from referrals. It's definitely true in the film industry. A lot of your contacts and your future work is going to come from that couple's wedding that you shot who's referring you to these other weddings. So it's always important to have a good professional attitude when you're shooting a wedding, so other people see that and then, like, again, they want to work with you. The other thing I would say is knowing what your client wants. Because shooting, like the couple that Phil and I are going to be shooting this weekend, they're more of a traditional middle-class family versus a wedding that I'm going to be shooting later in January, which is going to be an Indian wedding. So those are two very different scenarios. This Indian wedding is going to have about 500 guests and be about 4 days, whereas the wedding I'm shooting with Phil this upcoming weekend is only going to be 1 day. With how many guests are there going to be there, Phil?
Probably about 100, I think.
About 100. So definitely a very different comparison. And again, there's other companies I work with. There's this one company I work with where we shoot on 16mm film for the weddings. And the way we shoot is very sparingly, and it's just capturing the vital moments to capture the story of the wedding. Versus the Indian weddings I was talking about earlier, they actually want blanket coverage. They want us to shoot every single moment that happens. So we're constantly rolling cameras, trying to capture all the day's events, which I know kind of goes back to what we were saying, like the fire hose shooting. Again, we do end up throwing away a lot of that, and the editor has to just like sift through all of this footage, but it is what that client wants. So that's what we have to provide to them is the blanket coverage.
Yeah, all good advice. And weddings definitely are a lot of work. So,
yes.
You know, don't go into it thinking it's going to be easy money. And it's a lot of stress because you're dealing with the most important, or at this point in their lives, the most important day of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And
definitely.
They want everything to be perfect. And, you know, the last thing they want is to have an incompetent filmmaker or video maker or someone that has a camera who posted on Craigslist that they shoot weddings, you know, messing up on their perfect day.
And another thing I would like to say is, one, for yourself, if you're going to be a wedding photographer or videographer, invest in a nice pair of comfortable shoes. Those will save your butt when you're just standing all day and running around back and forth, chasing the bride and the groom. You're going to want like a nice, comfortable shoes. The other point is make friends with the photographer. Don't be enemies with the photographer. The photographer is going to be setting up nice shots for you, so you basically just have to kind of just work with the photographer. And if you're going to be the videographer, then you can just work with him to get really elegant shots that he might set up for you, or you can even kind of lead him into a shot. Just be a team. Even though you might not be with the same company, it's just best to like work together and improve both of your art.
Totally. I worked at a wedding down in San Diego, the last one I did in the summer, and it was hard to work with the photographer because the bride and groom wanted to kill the photographer, basically. He showed up late, he was lazy, he like didn't want to like set up for shots and stuff, so that was definitely hard, and we kind of had to take charge in that wedding because, like you said, usually the photographer is the one like setting up like shots, like, and we're kind of more flies on the wall, but you know, we had to step up and be the, you know, people in charge. So,
And that's probably worked good for you though, because you're going to be getting that great referral. Like you stepped up and unfortunately the other guy, his attitude is probably going to hurt him in his career.
Yeah, totally. So let's talk a little bit about, going to Europe. Both Vince and I, we studied abroad in Germany, in Bonn, Germany, during our junior year, and it was part of LMU's study abroad program, and it was specifically a film production program where we took filmmaking classes, and it culminated in us producing our junior thesis documentary films. Talk about Germany first, and then let's talk about your film and how you know, the struggles and everything that went into filming that, and then how did that push you to be more creative?
Yeah. Oh, Germany. I don't even know where to start. That was probably one of, I think, our single greatest experiences that we had while we were in college, if I am so bold to say.
Definitely.
Yeah, it was... I would definitely recommend, if you ever have the opportunity, to definitely study abroad, wherever it may be. And we got to stay with the host family, and I actually still keep in touch with my host family, and it's probably what made my trip even better. It was just getting to live with them and experience actual German culture and get just immersed in it completely. Germany was just so much fun. There's so many places we got to travel, so many stories. I remember... we all went to Paris together. And remember the one day, like, I went to, like, Disneyland or something? Disneyland,
yeah.
Paris? You went to, like, the catacombs or something?
Yeah. It's crazy.
So many good stories. But, yeah, Germany is definitely... or just studying abroad is just really an eye-opening experience. It just... I felt like I really matured from going to Germany. I just, like, came back different. I still don't even know if I know all the ways like it affected me, but it was just a great experience.
Yeah, just experiencing another culture, and because for so many years we're just stuck in, you know, the city that we live in or the state that we live in, and just the country that we live in that has so many, you know, values and ideas that are ingrained in our head, and like how things work, how, you know, how, you know, you're supposed to live, how you're supposed to eat, how you're supposed to have healthcare, how you're supposed to, you know, work. And then you go to, like, another country and you realize that, well, maybe, you know, there's a different way to do things. And, you know, whether you agree or disagree with, like, different cultures or different perspective, it's always good to have more perspectives, and it allows you to just be less biased, and, you know, it does mature you for sure.
And I remember we came over during an election period, so we got to kind of see the whole German political system in action, which was really interesting to see something different from, you know, the American democracy that we have in the States. Because they have a multi-party system, and I remember it was really interesting just learning about all the parties. They had, like, a pirate party, like, Republican Party, an ultra-liberal party. I mean, they had so many parties. It's really interesting seeing there how the system works.
Yeah, definitely. So back to filmmaking, we made documentaries. So talk to us about that process. How was that like? And, you know, finding a topic when you were abroad, you know, and actually implementing that.
So yeah, going into Europe for our study program, we all knew that we had to make a documentary. It was part of the specific program that we took. And we, the semester before we left, we had a preparation course of sorts where, we were kind of allowed to come up with an idea for a documentary before we got over there. Now, granted, most of us ended up finding our actual documentary while we were there in Germany, but, I was one of the few, I think, who stuck with my plan from the class that we had before we left. And my idea that I wanted to do was street art in Germany. And specifically, I wanted to follow the chalk artists. And I really wanted to get, like, one of those 3D chalk artists. Edgar Moeller is one of the most famous ones, or Julian Beaver, where they make these huge portraits on the ground that, from a certain perspective, they look like they're 3D works of art made out of chalk. And so the hard part was finding the contacts. I remember the second we got over into Europe, the one thing I wanted to do was just be as prepared as I possibly could and just have everything, like, organized, neat, and ready to go, because it's probably one of the things that most early filmmakers make the mistake of, is not being prepared and organized enough. Unfortunately, the way it happened for me, I ended up completely being unprepared. We got over there into Germany, and I started making a bunch of calls to a bunch of artists that I could find, and I remember this one woman got back to me. Her name was Christiana Richardson, and she was like, yes, I would be interested in being a part of your documentary. And I was like, great, well, when can we meet up? I'd like to, like, schedule a date so I could come up there, just have, like, a meeting with you, talk for a little bit so we get to know each other, and then we could go from there to, like, organize another day to come up and shoot. Unfortunately, the thing that I didn't think about when I picked using chalk art as my subject for my documentary was that chalk and rain don't really mix. And we came over in late August into Germany, and we were leaving in December. So basically, I had about a month to make my documentary since the rain seasons were about to start in Germany. And so it ended up, the second she contacted me, I had to go up there, like, the next day and start shooting. So I was just completely unprepared. I didn't even know exactly what questions I was going to have. I didn't even know if this was the woman that I wanted to be filming. But I just kind of strapped up and just did it. I went over, I met with her, I filmed her painting in Berlin, which is really awesome to be out there in Berlin where everybody's walking by and the Brandenburg Gate's there. And then I got all my footage. I came back to Bonn, where we were staying, and I started trying to edit it. And that's where I think for me the most difficult process was. And I know Phil and a bunch of the other people with us can attest, like, I was just really down on my film at the time. And I think it spawned from just the not being organized as I wanted to, and from just, like, the juggling all the hats.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I started looking at my footage, when I was looking at my interview with my talent, just from trying to like direct and be the cinematographer, I realized like the questions I were getting were fine, but the framing I had for my shot was just not good, and like it really just bothered me. And at the time, I just didn't notice because I was just focused on getting the questions, and like, you know, I didn't have a cameraman. I was trying to do everything by myself.
Yeah.
Which obviously is the importance of collaboration in filmmaking. But yeah, so the whole process was pretty rough, but I ended up editing a piece together. And I remember my hard drive crashed. And so I lost like everything I had edited together a week before it was due. So I had to make a complete new edit and then turn that in. And so I was just like, I remember I was like so frustrated with my project, and everybody like saw me, like knew I was bummed. I remember like Phil was actually even trying to cheer me up at one point. He's like, you know, you just got it done. Like, you should just be proud about that, which he's right. But retrospectively, I see that. Then I was just like upset.
Yeah. Well, it's hard because I feel like that happens a lot when you're making films.
Yeah.
Is you have this idea in your head of what you imagine it to be, and then the implementation part of it doesn't really turn out. Especially when you're, you know, a freelancer or you, like an indie filmmaker. When you're a professional, you know, production company, you can storyboard everything and exactly what you have in your mind is what appears on screen as a director. But exactly. there's so many things that can go wrong, especially like how we were doing it. Most of us were just, you know, going out on by ourselves or with one other person, being the cinematographers and the director. And so once you get into the editing room, you realize, well, this isn't what I imagined it to be, or this isn't what I thought it was going to be. So,
and especially with documentaries too, because you don't have the ability to really get necessarily shots that you have in your mind, like you were saying. Like, I mean, if you're doing a narrative, you can pretty much construct the entire role that you want.
Yeah.
But with documentaries, you know, you're shooting real life. So, like, my artist, for instance, didn't actually shoot 3D, so I wasn't able to get that. But she was the only artist I was able to find at the time. And, like, she ended up being a great documentary. And actually, a documentary went on to, despite my frustration with it, it ended up being selected as one of the 6 best films of our program, which was really uplifting for me. But yeah, you're totally right. You just, especially being a young filmmaker, there's so many things you overlook, even though if you try to prepare, there are just things you overlook, like having a second backup hard drive. I mean, that's so important. I realized that on that trip because my hard drive crashed, and that's probably one of the worst feelings as an editor or a filmmaker you could ever have.
Yeah.
Is losing all that work you did.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely an experience where I learned so much about filmmaking, so much about myself, and really learning that, like, what we put on the screen is, like, 50% what we're shooting, but also 50% a portrait of ourselves.
Nice. I like that. So, if there was one thing, I guess, from that experience that pushed you further in your career, what was it? Like, did you, you know, did that, like, gear you away from making documentaries, or did that make you want to be an editor, or did that make you want to be a cinematographer? What, you know, from that experience, those struggles, like, how did that affect the rest of your, you know, path?
I think in filmmaking itself, it kind of made me aware that editing wasn't so much my forte, that I'm more on the production side. It definitely made me realize the importance of collaboration. It also, I would definitely say it pushed me to not give up in myself. I actually, in my wallet right now, I still have the ticket from the screening of our films, and like I keep it in my wallet just to like remind me like to not give up on myself, even like if I think in anything in life, if I think like I'm not, you know, good enough or not doing the best I can, like, I kind of was like, look at that ticket. I'm like, you know what? Don't doubt yourself. Like, just trust in yourself and, like, keep pushing on and, like, just shoot or just live life. Just have those experiences. So I definitely say that's, like, the biggest thing I took from it, is it just really pushed me to put myself out there, and then whatever happens, it happens, and just grow from it.
Nice. Well, yeah, it was a great experience, something that we'll both always remember. And, I mean, it was both of our real first times, like, producing something, like, semi-professionally. Even though it was still a student film, it was, you know, better than, you know, all of our amateur videos from before that. And
we had, like, real cameras for one.
Yeah. And it was awesome because we took, you know, 2 weeks off of school just to shoot, and then we had the rest of the time, you know, just editing, like, for, like, a month straight. So yeah, it was a great experience. Before we, I'm going to ask you, for our listeners or viewers, what is one piece of advice, like the top tip, or, you know, for our filmmakers, what can they do to make better videos? I also wanted to ask you, what, for our viewers, how can they, like, see your work, or what's the best way to get a hold of you if, you know, if they want more advice or just want to check out your stuff? Is there a spot, like a Twitter, a website, or anything?
Probably the best way to contact me would be my website, and it's just vincentpatin.com.
Okay.
And Patin is spelled P-A-T-I-N.
All right, great. I'll have that in the show notes or whatever, for everyone, so you guys can go check out Vince's work and all of his stuff. So, yeah, is there one tip that you can give our students or our listeners, just to help them make better videos?
I guess the best thing to say, and I feel like everybody will probably hear this multiple times in their life as a filmmaker, the best thing you can possibly do is just shoot. Get out there and shoot. If you're not shooting, you're only going to hear about things. Rather, if you're shooting, you're going to be doing it. So it's really just important to get out there, even with friends, even if it's not for pay, if you're just having a good time, just keep shooting. It's the only way you can really develop your skills, both as a person, as a director, as a cinematographer, editor, whatever it is you want to do. As long as you're actually out there working and shooting and just enjoying yourself, you're gonna grow. And that's the other thing, though, is make sure you're in it, because this is an industry that's definitely, you need to be passionate about it. And so just don't lose sight of that passion, and you'll soar in this industry.
Great. Thank you, Vince, for taking part in this interview. Everyone, you're welcome. May well have you on again just to talk about some other stuff in the future, because I know we can talk a lot about more specific topics, such as, like, cinematography, or even just doing a full podcast on freelancing or something like that would be cool.
Cool.
So we'll do that in the future. But for everyone else, thank you for listening to this. Check out the website, www.videoschoolonline.com. You can subscribe to keep updated. Well, I don't spam, but I'll send you tips and tricks, the latest blog posts, and for everyone that subscribes, you get 50% off all of my online courses right now. So thank you for listening. Thank you, Vince, again, and we will see you next time.